summertime blues. Now, with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg, more with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right. Good morning. Thank you, Bill Rock. Yes, indeed. Summertime. It starts officially. It's Memorial Day weekend, and we are here just off the boardwalk. We're at Luna Park in Coney Island. And Mr. Mayor, welcome. We had hoped to be broadcasting from there, but you can see they have the asphalt paving ride going on right at the moment.
It is going on right now. And it's amazing how many people are working here and how spectacular it is. And this is really only part of it. This is called Luna Park, and there's something called Scream Park, which comes next year. I know you're going to be out there on all of those rides.
Absolutely. Probably if we've done this one, we might as well do that one next year. Now, I know, speaking of that, that the city is very involved in all of this.
Yeah, the city's job is to encourage economic activity. Coney Island used to be spectacular, world-renowned. Fellas fallen on hard times, I think it's fair to say. This is bringing it back. It started with some projects a few years ago, one of which, for example, the baseball stadium, the Cyclones, which is the Mets minor league team. It's a great stadium. If you want good baseball, you should go there. It is, you're so close to the field, you really feel like you're part of the game. And it's, I don't know whether it's double A or triple A ball, but it's a level down. Some of those kids probably will make the major leagues, but they're all, you know, at the college level trying. They play so hard. And the amusement rides here is spectacular. What people say is, oh, it'll never be Disney World or Disneyland. That's correct, and it's not trying to be. This is New York. This is a place where you can come by subway, you can come by bus, you can drive, you can bicycle here. Great beaches. The beaches are phenomenally clean. Every day we have these enormous power rakes that go under the sand and make sure that everything is perfectly clear. The ocean is clean and a lot of fun. And, you know, it's a place you can go for without spending an enormous amount of money or an enormous amount of time. So whether you're wealthy or you're poor, you can come out to Coney Island and your kids can have a great time. And, you know, if you're an adult, you've got to hide that you're having a good time, but I think if you sneak in a little bit.
I've actually enjoyed just watching the rides. Visually, they're exciting. They're testing them out. The Wonder Wheel, which is right in front of us. We've got the Cyclone.
Cyclone's been here for a long time.
Have you ever been on the Cyclone?
I don't think so. There was an amusement park near where I grew up in Revere Beach, Massachusetts, and they had a similar thing, a roller coaster.
I've been to that park.
It's all gone now. It's all apartment buildings.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And that's one of the things we wanted to make sure here didn't happen. We want to encourage apartments, but you also want to have public needs places to go. And so what was happening here is the amusements were going away and the apartments were taking over. You want to have a balance. You want to have a balance in everything. We need jobs for people. This there's 400 people that are employed here. I think it's 400 and a half come from Coney Island. Maybe it's 200 and a half. A lot of construction jobs. And this will galvanize the whole area. And so there'll be a lot of other construction things going on.
So Luna Park's rebuild is just step one.
It's just step one, yeah. And, it's step two if you think of the previous stuff like the Cyclone Stadium that was done before. But it's just another step in the revitalization of the city. A lot of these areas throughout the city, from the southernmost end to the northern, from east to west, there's some areas that, because they're old, fell on hard times, and now we're sort of coming back and making them work again.
This really is an everyman kind of place, as you've described it. I mean, the costs are not insignificant, but they're not astronomical either.
No, right? I was asked about that before. You know, it can cost $10, $12, $14 to go to the movies. You can get an all-day pass here for, I think it's $26. You can pay per ride. But it's certainly affordable in the context that you've got to pay something. And keep in mind also, on Coney Island, you can just go to the beach. It doesn't cost anything, and you can have a great time.
The history of Coney Island is fascinating. As I was preparing for today, reading some of it, the way the amusements and the attractions and the people of New York's use of this area has risen and fallen with, of course, the ages, the times, and what's gone on, yet it is really exemplary of the people of New York, including the promoters. They've all come here. They've come through here.
You know, you've got Ringling Brothers, Barnum & Bailey Circus, opened some tents just to the west of us here, the other end of Luna Park. I went last year. It's spectacular. you know, you have the real circus here. And there's a lot of the old line stuff. Nathan's Hot Dogs, been here forever. That's where they have the hot dog eating contest. I'm always there at the weigh-in. I don't go to the actual one. It's a little bit.
You don't participate.
It's a bit over the top for me. But I will say I love Nathan's Hot Dogs. I think you got to understand, given the diversity of New York's population, and New Yorkers like to do things, they like to take trips, they travel, but it'd be great if you could go for one day in Disney World, Disneyland, and not one-day excursions. That's
and they're expensive. Very expensive.
Yeah, that certainly are.
You know, I think to connect an event of this week, a news event of this week, to where we are here at Luna Park, I was talking with the governor yesterday about the state parks,
right,
and the wrestling match that has gone on between he and the legislature in funding those and trying to keep them open, and why the importance, and as he said, the people use the parks, and when their parks are closed, they're not a happy camper.
Well, they're not happy campers when any service isn't provided. I think one of the things that you want parks for, kids have to have something to do. A kid with nothing to do gets into trouble, and a kid with plenty to do does not. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but there's an awful lot to be said for after-school programs and programs in the summer. We want to get jobs for kids in the summers, but you want to have places they can go, like good parks. Yeah, and I'm not the governor's got to worry about the state parks. The city parks is what my job is, and our city parks are better than ever. We are building some new ones. We're trying to find a funding source for those parks. So, for example, Brooklyn Bridge Park, we said we just can't do it unless there is some dedicated revenue source. In that case, we're working with Dan Squadron, the representative of the area up in Albany, and we've got to find a ways, whether it's an apartment building that would pay, or a hotel, or stores, or whatever, but a dedicated revenue source, because the city, even in tough times, wants to make sure the parks stay open. We are lucky in places like Central Park and Prospect Park in Brooklyn, where there's a lot of private philanthropy that pays for it, but there are parts of the city that just doesn't have the economic base to take care of parks with private philanthropy, and we want to make sure that they have parks too. So it's a balance. I was talking to my girlfriend. She's the chairman of the board of Hudson River Park. It is one of the most spectacular parks. Goes all the way up the west side. It's just amazing what they've done. But they've got tough times because they need revenue sources, and the neighbors don't want things in the park that generate revenue. But without that, and they can't continue it. That happens to be a state park. But we have similar problems.
One thing that I know you were happy about this week, as all of New York was, that the Super Bowl number 48 in 2014 coming to town?
Coming to town. In all fairness, I think we should give the mayor of the town of New Jersey his due. It is in his town, Rutherford, New Jersey. And I hope the people from Rutherford benefit from this and take pride in it. The stadium is a great stadium. As you remember, we wanted to build a stadium in New York City. We didn't. New Jersey did. And I'm sympathetic to Governor Christie, who's trying to make sure that his state benefits from that. So we'll do this joint with the mayor of Rutherford and the governor of New Jersey. But a lot of the big events will take place during the week in New York City. Having said that, you know, there are hotels in New Jersey that a lot of people will stay in, so this will be good for their business as well. Oh, it's a great show, and the criticism of, what happens if it's cold? Well, the playoffs are going to be played.
It will be cold.
Playoffs probably will be played. Some of the cities will be very cold. And as I said, you know, when you're worried about cold, this isn't beach volleyball. This is football. And the greatest game ever played was a game when it was freezing cold, 1958, Yankee Stadium.
Absolutely.
Colts, which was my favorite team back then. I went to college in Baltimore a little bit later. And the Giants. Yogi Berra was to Yankee Stadium what Y.A. Tittle was to football. These are the old guys. They played it the old ways.
They did indeed. Now, I've talked to a couple of the football players, and they're actually looking forward to it. I mean, they say that's what football is all about.
And incidentally, it's cold and windy for both teams.
Exactly. Everybody's playing on the same.
Right.
Everybody's playing on the same field. I read that Madison Square Garden or at least there's some discussion about it moving a block over to the Farley Postal Service. I know that had been discussed.
There have been people who've always wanted to do that. Last time I talked to the people from Madison Square Garden, which was 2 days ago, they are planning a three-year renovation of the garden, the same building right where it is. They're going to do it in three stages during the summer because they can't when the Knicks and the Rangers are playing. But they have plans to go ahead. If somebody offers them a better deal, maybe they'd be receptive. But as of two or three days ago, the senior management of the garden that I met with showed me pictures of what they're going to do inside the garden. I think it'd be great.
Are they still planning to put the bridge across the top?
The bridge was right there with the great views down. And, you know, that's become fashionable. If you go to Yankee Stadium and you go to Citi Field, you find the same thing.
So, sort of the open spaces where people can congregate and watch the action. All right, our action continues from Luna Park. That's at Coney Island. It's a beautiful Friday morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. We will continue 19 minutes after 8 o'clock. Coming right back. And our WOR Restaurant of the Week, New York State House. It was nice stuff to bring some stuff over for us as we broadcast live from Brooklyn. They are right around the corner. We're in their neighborhood. Watching some of the rides go round and round, testing them out. There will be a dedication ribbon cutting later this morning, right
you
after the show.
And we would not miss an opportunity to have a photo op.
Yeah,
and ribbon cutting.
You're that kind of guy.
Absolutely. But it's fun.
It is fun.
You know, and I like these kinds of press conferences when it's all good and there's nothing bad.
That's absolutely right.
Some of them aren't.
I understand that you gave the commencement address down at Johns Hopkins?
Johns Hopkins yesterday. It was my alma mater. It's the second time I've done it. Then I shook hands with over 2,000 young people.
2,000?
It was 2,000 undergraduates and the graduate schools, and it was fun.
Let me see your hand.
The hand's still there. One young lady tripped coming down the stairs, but I grabbed her because I was still holding on. That was good, so I saved somebody. A number of people said thank you for lots of things, and it was really good. Perfect weather. They gave honorary degrees to half a dozen people, two of whom were old friends of mine and had been at Hopkins. One went on, is now running Tulane. Was running Tulane Medical School, and the other was running National Institutes of Health. And, you know, it was nice to see some old friends from the board I hadn't seen in 8 years, 9 years. Couple of them looked a little bit older, but then probably so do I.
No, I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't go there because I'm sitting next to you.
But you did too.
I did. I did a couple of Saturdays ago out at Centenary College.
Right.
I was presented with a doctorate of humane letters, which I was very proud of.
And all of the rights, privileges, and responsibilities that pertain there too.
Exactly. Zero. I mean, do I get a better?
But will it be framed? Will it be framed on the wall at your home? Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And does Wendy now have to call you doctor or sir?
And my son Will is here, and it's always
Will awesome. Will told me he has new respect for you. But given the level that he was coming from.
It's kind of like going your investment going from 1% to 100%, but it only moved a penny.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So you got that right. Let's get into a couple of things here. What's with the charter? What can you tell me with the charter schools and the assembly up in Albany and all that?
Well, the issue here is people think it's about trying to get $700 million from the federal government. That'd be great if we do, but it's really about getting more charter schools. There's something like 40,000 kids waiting to get into charter schools. We don't have near enough. Charter schools, John, are public schools. They just operate under a different set of rules, and they get a lot of private money, and they cost the taxpayer less. But they are public schools. Those that we have, a handful don't do well, but most of them do very, very well, and they provide competition for the more traditional kinds of public schools. And all of these schools, charter and non-charter, but all the public schools together, have in the last 5 years improved the graduation rate by 27%, while the state has only gone up by 3%. So, and the public votes with their feet. The parents know. The parents want these schools. Now, there is a state limit on the number of schools we have. You would not be able to qualify for federal funds and No Child Left Behind. A race to the top is what it's called these days. The best you could do, you could not get that if you had a limit, or at least a low limit. So this bill increases the limit to 260, or by 260, and that really is critical to our ability to open new schools. Without it, we couldn't open new schools. Without opening new schools, we can't continue to give parents what they want.
In reading this story over the past week, it became evident that I must admit I was not aware of that one of the contentions seems to be, and I'm curious whether or not it's a legitimate one, about the actual placing of these charters inside existing public schools and some of the tension there.
Some people have said this is a reform bill. The truth of the matter is we've had the ability to put charter schools into the traditional charter school buildings, splitting up big schools into small schools. Something we've been doing all through the city.
Do you physically do that?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
You know, the charter school would be in
they
one
have floor
section.
Number four, okay. And but they would share things like lunchrooms and gyms and school safety officers and that kind of stuff. And this continues that process. There are some minor tweaks if private money comes to fix up, is willing to fix up the fourth floor, the city will do floors one through three as well. But the bottom line is the chancellor has to run the school system. This continues to let Joel Klein run the school system. He's done a great job, and the fact that he's controversial is because he's shaking things up. And when you ask the public, the polling, they say, oh, he's not popular. You ask parents, they want to send their kids to New York City public school systems. We've got our problem is not enough seats because it's interesting, particularly in some neighborhoods where parents had the economic ability to send the kids to private schools. That's where our biggest lack of seats are now, because they don't want to send them to private schools anymore. They want to send them to public schools, but it's very hard to build new schools. We're opening something like 25 new schools this coming September. Sharon Greenberger, who's now the chief operating officer of the school system, before this ran the School Construction Authority, and they've done a spectacular job. But no matter how fast we build classrooms and seats, they get taken up because the school system keeps getting better and better. And we wanted to make sure that the state university system, which has been helpful working with Joel Klein, continues to authorize charter schools, and that we can put them where the needs are. And, you know, if you have a charter school in the non-traditional part, in the traditional school, everybody competes. It's good for everybody.
Do you see a day when the charter schools are no longer charter schools and they are the public school system? I mean, is this a morphing?
No, I don't know that it's a morphing. I think there are schools that operate with one set of rules, schools that operate with another set of rules. There's no guarantee that either set of rules is always going to produce the best results. But what has happened is generally the more flexibility the principal has to work with his or her teachers, and the more freedom the teachers have, the better they are able to tailor the education to the individual kid, and the kids do better.
But again, would you see a day when there would be sort of an unlimited number of charter schools available?
Well, I think I don't see any reason for a cap whatsoever. And in fact, a lot of places have gotten rid of the cap. And this bill is not perfect. If it were up to me totally, which is not, the legislature's got to approve this and the governor's got to sign it. I do not think you should have any cap whatsoever. Now, some people don't like that, but it's democracy. They're right to say that.
All right. One of the things this morning, we've talked about this last Friday when you were here, about your homeless and your new commissioner of the homeless. He has proposed homeless taking savings that they might have.
The idea of our homeless shelter system is to give people temporary shelter when the alternative is sleeping on the streets. I think as a society, we do not want people sleeping on the streets. And if your family situation, economic situation is such that you don't have a place, we as a society are going to give you a place. But it's not permanent housing. You pay for your home. I pay for mine. Everybody should pay for theirs if they can possibly afford it. And what the commissioner who's the new new commissioner of homeless services, Scott Diamond, has done. He came from HRA, where we ask people who get food stamps if they're able to do it, don't have kids at home, and healthy and in the right age, they have to work and to qualify, and you're going to have to work here. The difference here is we're taking the money, we're putting it into an account, saving it, and when you can get your life back on track, get a job, and now can afford to go and rent your own home outside of the shelter system and pay for it yourself rather than having the taxpayer pay for it, these monies that we collect from you will be applied towards the rent and help you
more
do
than
it.
Just a bed in any given night. That's what the program is.
Yeah, I mean, we
towards.
Want, listen, particularly if you have kids, everybody wants the dignity of a decent place to live. And if you fall on hard times, I've always thought society should help you. But I don't, what we're trying to do is to give you a hand up, not a hand out. I don't think that anybody should be able to put their feet up and say, the hell with it, let everybody else pay it, I'm not going to carry my own weight. That's just wrong.
I agree. Absolutely. 8:30 is our time, Mr. Mayor. Let us take a break real fast here and get to the very latest news.
We'll come
right back to Mayor Michael. All right, we continue from Luna Park. The air race ride was just sort of turning around. I was trying to get the mayor to see if he would go on the air race ride.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Okay. After the ribbon cutting ceremony.
After the ribbon cutting and a piece of pizza.
This week on the program, without question, the most controversial subject was the mosque down by the World Trade Center, and it's really become a lightning rod for unfortunately too many of the wrong reasons. I think I know you've commented on it, and I know that you
somebody
are supportive.
Somebody wants to build a religious house of worship, they should do it, and we shouldn't be in the business of picking which religions can and which religions can't. I think it's fair to say if somebody was going to try to, on that piece of property, build a church or a synagogue, nobody'd be yelling and screaming. And the fact of the matter is that Muslims have a right to do it, too. What is great about America, and particularly New York, is we welcome everybody. And I just, if we are so afraid of something like this, what does it say about us? Democracy is stronger than this. The ability to practice your religion was one of the real reasons America was founded. And for us to say no is just, I think, not appropriate. Nice ways to phrase it.
All right, I agree. That was the position I took, because once you start to tell somebody no, then where do you stop?
Right, I've always said people that are not absolutely in favor of separation of church and state should rethink their position if they're religious. I suppose if you're not religious, maybe you don't care. But if you are religious, you do not want the government picking religions, because what do you do the day they don't pick yours?
Or to transpose that into speech, if you want to shut somebody's speech down, be careful, because you could be next.
Absolutely, but I will defend to my death your right to say those things, even when you disagree with me and are wrong.
I know you keep reminding me of that. Terror funding. This is sort of an interesting event of the last week here, with the back and forth and the accusations out of Washington versus New York.
Never enough. I mean, I think that's fair to say. Look, the political reality is that because the Senate, every state has the same number of votes regardless of the population or geographical size or economics or anything else, the real world is that virtually every program to get through Washington has to have a component for a majority of the states. The same thing is true in Albany. We do things where there has to be some money for upstate and downstate and left state and right state. That's just the real world. It's part of democracy. And, as Winston Churchill said, terrible system, except it's better than all others. But that is what it is. What I think is they should give out an awful lot more based on need and make sure that the money is well spent. It's a little bit of a cheap shot, but not a lot. And it's certainly true. There are an awful lot of small towns that have taken Homeland Security money to buy equipment that they don't need. And in all fairness to them, they say, well, if we don't use it, we're not going to get it. And in the meantime, who knows? There's always some chance you need a hazmat truck or a big ladder. But if you've got a town that's, you know, a quiet town, it's not on the center stage, particularly worldwide stage, the risks really are inconsequential, I would argue. Finite, but very, very small. And if you don't, for example, have any buildings greater than two stories, you don't need a 10-story ladder truck for your fire department. But, you know, the mayors will all say, well, then I've got to get as many things as I can. You never know. And that's my job. And that's okay. That is, it's Congress that should stand up. And it does need leadership from the White House, not letting either side of the aisle or either end of Pennsylvania Avenue off the hook. We don't do a good job in focusing monies where they are needed. The political reality is we spread some around. If it's a small amount that's spread around, okay, that's democracy. If it's a large amount, then you're jeopardizing the safety of this country.
Are you familiar with the Transportation Preservation Act? It's a bill that is before both houses of Congress. It's been supported by Mitchell over in McMahon, rather, Mike McMahon over in Staten Island and Lautenberg and also Menendez. This would be monies, $2 billion used to support transportation systems where fares have gone up and service has been cut to bring them back down. My question is long way around. Aren't we just forestalling the inevitable?
Yes, we need monies for capital projects. And if the government subsidizes the operating stuff, we're never going to have the need to automate and make things more efficient. That was the problem that we tried to address with congestion pricing. That money would have gone into capital projects that would make the subways and buses more pleasurable, cover more areas, go faster, be safer, and cost less. And if we come in and subsidize operating expenses, which, you know, the TWU union would like to have you do, and I understand why they want to protect their members, but if you do that this time, maybe next time we can't afford it and you're just going to have an even worse problem. This is a problem that gets worse and worse and worse because we don't step back and make the capital investments. And people say, well, how can you do that in times when we don't have enough money to continue the existing service? You know, sometimes you just got to go through a little bit of pain to get to the other side. But we are in the situation where we have not invested in our mass transit in a ways that we just have to do. And this is an excuse to not do that.
And it is the automation that will make the difference. That doesn't mean people are going to get fired left and right, but through attrition and efficiency.
Absolutely. The most of the downsizing would be attrition anyways. It takes a long time to put these things in. But, you know, God forbid we have a terrorist attack in our subway system the ways they've had in lots of European cities, and everybody's going to be screaming, where was the security? Well, you know, go back. Congestion pricing would have gotten some of the money, maybe not all, who knows. But some of the money that you needed to make those kinds of investments and make the subway system safer. People say, well, I can't live in some areas because there's no mass transit, no bus system. Well, congestion pricing would have done that. Albany said we got a better idea and we're still waiting. And here we are 4 years later. And no money, no improvements. Streets are clogged. People don't have incentive to move over to mass transit, and mass transit doesn't have the monies to give them that incentive.
The James Zagrota 9/11 Health and Compensation Act is moving slowly through Washington.
Yep.
Are you concerned that there's no sort of outside number on this, that it has a potential to grow to enormous amount?
Well, every federal program has an enormous potential to do that. If you take a look at what Medicare and Medicaid cost today, I don't think anybody in Congress would have voted for it. At least in today's economic climate, they would say they wouldn't have voted for it. That it's easy once you have a program to let costs get out of control, and that was one of the fears. And the president, in getting his health care bill through, said that in this bill there are structures that will contain the growth and the cost. They call it bending the curve, which is a euphemism for growing at less rapid rate, but not a decline. But the president said that he's addressed it in that bill, and I hope that's true. The problem is you pass a bill today, it doesn't get implemented until, let's say, 2014, and it doesn't get out of control until 2018, and there's nobody in office today that's going to be around in 2018, and nobody's going to remember.
Now, one of the things about this 9/11 health bill is that the city is on the hook for some 10%. Has that money been put aside, or?
Well, no, it's just in the operating budget. We understand we have to do our share to help those who went first for rescue and then a recovery effort. I don't think there's any question at this point. There are a lot of people whose lungs and bodies were damaged by breathing that air down there. I keep thinking back then of, you know, one time I went down there and I walked away and I tasted it for a couple of days for sure. But we asked people to go in and they volunteered to go in. And it's our responsibility to take care of them, and it's a national responsibility, and New York should do its part, but it's a national thing. And from the federal government's point of view, they should want to make sure that the next time there's a disaster anyplace else in the country, that people and firms feel comfortable going in and helping. Because if the companies that did the recovery all go bankrupt because we make them pay for the damage done to their workers' bodies, nobody's going to go in the next time.
To that, a question I hadn't really thought about. In the future, I think the number I saw of people that might be eligible for this monies over the long term, 13,000 specifically, potentially 55,000. Nobody knows what that real number is. But if there were another event like that, would this, is the city prepared with the breathing apparatus, with the rescue materials?
Well, no two events are ever exactly the same. But I can tell you, we think we've learned a lot from that. We plan all the time, Office of Emergency Management, Fire Department, PD, Health Department, lots of different agencies, education, what do you do with the kids and the areas and that sort of thing. And whatever happens the next time won't be exactly like the one in the past, but when you have the trick is to have very smart people who are very flexible, who work hard, who've thought about lots of problems and know how to approach problems and work together to come up with solutions. They will have to do that invariably on the next time from scratch, because the next problem, as I said, is going to be different. But they will at least know how to do it and will have the right people in place.
Nothing.
And I feel phenomenally confident that we do have the right people in place and that they do work together and we do have the right technology. What the next problem will be, who knows?
Yeah, the problems don't come with a roadmap. They don't come with instructions.
They don't come with instructions, but they all have some common things about you have to notify people, you have to make sure we get resources to the site, whatever that site is. You have to make sure that all of the resources are coordinated and can communicate and that sort of stuff. You have to make sure they have equipment. You have to make sure that the public understands and has invested the monies that we need in that equipment, and I think we're doing that.
We talked some time ago about the desire on some people's part to raise the minimum wage or have the wage of employees in a subsidized project above the minimum wage rate, and that has come up for again. The city council is talking about that, and I know that you were very much against it when we talked 6 months ago.
The issue here is there are some projects that just, like a lot of affordable housing, do not make any sense economically unless the government invests some money in it. If you raise the costs for that project. It just means the government's going to have to put more money in, or the project's not going to get done. And we need a lot of affordable housing. This would be very devastating for that. There are an awful lot of nonprofits that we help. They would be devastated by this. You want to have everybody have good jobs, make lots of money, and enjoy the great things in life. Some jobs, the reality is, pay more than others. But for the government to get involved, it's almost like trying to keep the tides from coming in. The free market works much better. And where the government does get involved, we have some rights. We should certainly insist on minimum wage. It's a federal law. You have to do it in the state law. But the bottom line is having the public subsidize some workers and not others is just not fair, and the public is not going to stand for it, I think. And the public's got to understand when they see this what the legislator that any legislator that wants this fundamentally is saying: hey, this is somebody who you're going to pay their salary, and you're not going to get a benefit from it. And I don't think the public's there.
If this one comes to the desk,
I could not support it.
Okay,
it's just a bad idea because we need the housing. We need the all the social service organizations, everybody where the government invests its money now. We're investing it not because we want to. We're investing it because we have to, because we need those services and they can't stand on their own. And raising their costs is just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And it's not fair to everybody else.
And speaking of putting money into things that are important and businesses and the economy, the tech startups, which the city has gotten involved with.
We're trying to diversify our economy. We're becoming a high-tech center. I said the other day at a little conference I talked at, there are other places, but in the end, the intellectual capital of the world is right here, just like the financial capital of the world is right here, and the fashion capital of the world is right here, and the media capital of the world is right here. And, Microsoft has a couple thousand people here. Google has a couple thousand people. Thomson Reuters has 4,500, 5,000 people. Bloomberg has 4,500, 5,000 people here. If you're going to have a startup, in the end, the most important thing in any company is the people that work there. And this is where you have a concentration of people with education and drive and willingness to try new things. The city is not the right place for every kind of business. If you need big land, I always joked about, I'm going to grow corn. Not here. You want big open spaces. Have a steel mill. Not here. You want big open spaces. If you want to make a million T-shirts, that's a business where you just have to have the lowest prices, lowest rent, lowest taxes, lowest salaries. Our people, we don't want those kinds of jobs here. That million T-shirts going to be made overseas. If you want to make clothing that really requires great talent and seamstresses and designers, this is the place for it. And tech is like that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's take a break right here. We are live from Luna Park out at Coney Island on this Friday before Memorial Day. You'll be marching this weekend?
I will be marching in a number of parades on Sunday and Monday, taking time out in the middle of the day Sunday to give another graduation speech. This one is at a high school, doing a favor for a friend. But his daughter, who has grown up, I've known her since the day she was born.
You'll be handing her her diploma.
I don't know about that. I'll see how they structure it. But she used to jump up and give me a kiss. Now she's a little bit old. they don't do that when they become seniors in high school.
No, I don't. At least not with you, I can
right.
assure you.
8:53.
Let's take a break. All right, I want to apologize to all of you that wanted to ask the question to the mayor today. Technically, we are here out at Coney Island. It got a little dicey, so we decided we'd be safer not to do that than have it not work out right. June 1st, next week, on Tuesday, you've got a budget, don't you, that you got to put together by the end of the month?
By the end of June, we will have an on-time budget. The city council and the mayor, the speaker of the city council, will all stand in the rotunda at City Hall and announce an on-time budget. I'm very confident of that. And I think it will be a budget that will let the services continue at a level that keeps this the greatest city in the world. Can't do everything given the economics. There's always going to be a little bit of annoyance and in some cases even pain. But all things considered, it will be a good budget. The only big unknown is we're waiting for the state to do their budget because we send an enormous amount of money to Albany. They send a little bit of it back. We always say thank you for that. And now they want to send less of it back. And since they subsidize, in theory, roughly half of our education budget and half of our Medicaid budget, if they cut back, we're not going to have enough money to do what we want in those two areas, and it spills over.
So what do you do? Just guess if there is no budget by June 30th?
If there is no state budget by June 30th, we will estimate what the damage would be if the governor's budget were the one that was actually adopted. The governor has a proposed budget, the assembly has one, and the Senate has one. The assembly's a little bit better for us, the Senate's a little bit better than the governor's. The governor's the worst. The governor may be more realistic than the others, I don't know. But we're going to take the worst-case scenario. We don't have any choice. And we're going to have to make some painful decisions based on that. And if it turns out that they come through with monies later on, it may be too late because, you know, for example, if you have fewer teachers and the school year starts, I'm not sure you can go and put rejigger everything after the school year. Maybe have to go with a smaller number.
All right. Well, go have a great time on the Luna Park rides here this
and
morning.
And a piece of pizza.
And a piece of pizza and a Nathan's hot dog.
Absolutely.
All right. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. We'll see you next Friday. That's going to do it live from Luna Park. Have yourselves a wonderful.
I think that's what happened. I don't think that's nice. Anyway, there's four women in the race.